Welcome to the Breaks and Joins podcast. I'm Sue Mayo, and I'm working on a project about repair of our stuff, ourselves, and our communities. And in each episode, we meet somebody who's really deeply involved somehow in repair of all kinds. Really hope you enjoy the podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe and share it with your friends.
My name is Chuck Blue Lowry, and I am a filmmaker working on the project. I will be editing all of the podcasts. The podcasts have been recorded in line with social distancing measures, so if you do hear the occasional background noise, like a dog barking or a dodgy internet connection, it's all just part of the recording from home setup. Regardless of that, we have some fantastic conversations in store for you, and we really hope you enjoy the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Today, we're really delighted to welcome Gaynor Tutani, who is a producer, curator, writer. She has a wonderfully hybrid practice, which we're going to hear a lot about, but also very interesting personal history, which brought her to this work. And we met at a conference at Queen Mary in East London, which was a lot about learning, actually, wasn't it? It was really about how we restructure what learning means, and some really interesting stuff at that. Are you an East Londoner? Is that your patch?
Yes, I am. I live in East London, but I would say my soul is in South London, because that's just where I started my whole creative journey. But we'll get into that. But my soul is really much South East London, you know, New Cross, Broccoli, Orrock Park, all that areas is my soul.
You've just walked into our trap, because we're very partisan.
Fantastic.
Both of us live and work a lot in South London. So
nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's get down to really the story about how you got to doing the work that you do. What brought you to this kind of work?
It's actually been quite organic, I would say. I've always really loved art and culture. I've always loved history as a student at school, but music was quite central to everything. I've always really loved music, going to gigs and bands, and all my friends are musicians and creatives. So I always had that practice at the back of my mind. But why I started talking about South London is like where the journey began is when I was at university. Most of my friends were artists. And so they were like, Gaynor, you're a journalist, you want to write, why don't you come and write about our work? So I'd go to their studios and kind of see some of the work that they're doing. And I was like really quite connected to it, because I was also studying history and history of ideas. The course, the way I was thinking about history was thinking using art or thinking about what certain ideas were connected to explaining life in general, really. So I always really thought, wow, this is really brilliant work. I think it's more from a human approach. When I engage with my friends, even though they were artists, I got to see them more deeply through their art. I understood more some of the things that they were not always saying, but I saw it in their art, and I was able to pick up certain things that they were quite unconscious of. So I began to be really connected with that. And then on a personal journey, I think it was also for loss. I know you talk about mending and lossing, but I lost my parents when I was young, and I never really quite mourned that or understood what that was. But as I started writing or studying history and, you know, African culture, I began to see my parents, but I didn't know what that was sort of meaning. So it kind of began happening in that sense of like, I'm wanting, I want to understand their history and culture, but how do I do that? And then art was just the leeway. So I produced performances and events, music shows with my friends, but I was always thinking about the space. How do people feel when they're in here? What is the energy? So I was already curating without thinking about what curating is. And then later on, one of my friends was, Gaynor, you know you're a curator, right? I was like, no, what is that? And that's sort of how it developed further.
I think that's so fascinating, because that is a really organic way, and it braided together both personal journey and also your interest in history. And
yes.
Can you just say a bit more about what the history of ideas is?
Yeah, so the history of ideas, it's sort of like a branch of philosophy. It's really questioning great people, who came with theories or the ways that they were explaining life. So let's say an idea of is what is just, what is justice, what is religion. But for me, I've always really been interested in like existentialist thought. And so that was kind of my entryway. When you think about curating, I'm always thinking about what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to connect? So that has always been my grounding. Even when I create, I found that I'm always kind of thinking about what does that mean in the grand space of things. So I'm always using historical analysis, analyzing things that happened in the past. What do they mean now within our current society? And fundamental to that is looking at difficult history. I'm always thinking about, the transatlantic slave trade, colonization. What did that impact mean to me, especially as an African who was born and raised in Zimbabwe, but who really has very Western views and values due to colonization. So I was always very interested in like, how did that change myself and who am I? So that was sort of like the grounding of thinking about history of ideas, but it's quite broad, I would say. So it was a joint course. I did history simultaneously to history of ideas.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something so interesting there about how deeply rooted systems of thought are. And I think that's something that maybe has become much more apparent in kind of more recent phases of trying to understand the impact on colonizers and the colonized
Yes.
of colonization. And it
Yeah.
strikes me often that the fact just the fact of colonization, the fact that it was considered to be acceptable, has deeply affected colonizing countries. Because once you build in that as an acceptable way for a country to behave in relation to other countries, that actually virally infects the systems of thought.
It does. It really does. And for me, it began to really question the way I thought and the way I saw the world. And I have to really start challenging that for my own self. So it kind of really starts off like, instead of decolonizing myself, I don't know if that makes sense. I had to really start thinking about what is my authentic Africanness? What is not also my authentic Gaynor-ness? I don't know if that makes sense. Who is Gaynor to the core?
Yes.
And so whenever I do anything or produce anything, it's always working on those three elements of what sits right within me. Is the work I'm doing, does it have integrity? Is it compassion? Because love is where it comes from myself as well. Just really growing up from a family that has always been thinking about others before self. And then also just be curiosity of like, how do we connect things? How do we make sense with things that doesn't make sense? Because to me, colonization doesn't make sense. It's like it really doesn't make sense how someone can do that if you genuinely come from love. So again, it was all those things that I really always sort of connect and question. So I'm a thinker. I remember one of my friends says to me again, not everything has to be deep, but constantly I'm always thinking about something. Or if I find that I'm feeling something and I'm like, why am I feeling like that? I have to re-question that and readjust, And sometimes you can be the problem as well of any situation. So I'm always really thinking about that and trying to use art as a way of sort of processing it and understanding and creating unity and togetherness. I always come from that sense. So yeah, that's why I always say it's quite organic for me. I don't always separate the professional to the personal because they're very much intertwined.
Yeah, a kind of impulse to like follow things to their root
Yes.
and not just to accept the bit that you can see above the ground, but to really follow that deeply to the root. When you talk about the impulse of compassion and of love, I wonder where you sit with ideas of what we actually need to deconstruct and what we might need to destroy. Because I think in our journey in Breaks and Joins as a project, we were very much at the beginning attracted by what we saw in people who mend, actually, people who are physical menders of material things. They showed curiosity, tenacity, imagination, and just a kind of, there was such a spirit that I think all of us in our team, we just thought we want some of this because they were not defeated, you know. And then I think as we began to explore the theme more, it became really clear that not only is it true that not everything can be mended, but it's also true that not everything should be mended. And I
True.
think we began to have more conversations with people saying it's time to lay this aside or to reject that system and to create a new system. And I
Yeah.
wonder, in your thinking, where do you sit with this connection between what's the connection between having compassion and love, but also understanding that some things have to be ended?
I think it's from the people I look up to. I think it's like I said, my parents died when I was quite young, so I've always looked up into the way my grandmother dealt with things. She was such a woman who would endure stuff. but out of love would know that she would sort of put herself at the backside. So certain things would be like people would treat her in a bad way, but she would still treat them in a nice way, because you knew that the way they did whatever they did is not because of them. It's because of something that has kind of influenced how they're thinking. So if she sort of really came from really understanding what has affected them, then she could kind of try and let them see something in a different way. So I guess it's the same thing when we look at the structures. What is it that pushed these people to think in the way that they did? But it doesn't mean that I've forgotten that. It doesn't mean I wasn't hurt, but I can come back to it and process it at another time. And I think that's what healing is really about. You know, in psychology or philosophy, you go in and you kind of question what caused that trauma. How can I go back to it and kind of move forward? And I think that's sort of like that thing or where I'm coming from. And also the other woman who I've also looked up to. So my curating partner, Jean Joseph. So together we are Earthworks, and Earthworks has kind of really has that intergenerational ways of thinking of some of the things that we think we're building now have always started in the past anyway. So instead of like restarting new things, it's like, what are the tools from the past that we already have that we can take on rather than continuously building when things are already there? It's coming from that element. And then there's also James Barner, who's a great friend of mine. So he has this picture in his house where there's a tree and a quote that says, civilizations are built by men who plant trees under with shades they never enjoy. So it's also that thought of like, whatever we're building now, we are not the ones who might enjoy it, but we can really have that future of like who is coming behind us and what tools can we teach them so that they're able to even move to the first thing. So it's like a relay to me, passing down the baton. And so that's how me and Jean really work. It's an intergenerational program. And how we met as well is a beautiful story. I don't know if you want me to share that with you,
Yeah,
but yeah,
please.
it's such a beautiful story. So when I discovered that I really want to be a curator, I used to go to any show you can think of. And then at one of the shows was a talk at the V&A, the Staying in Power exhibition. And there were curators and talkers. And I remember writing notes on some of the artists that were there. And then I left my notebook where I was sitting. And then when I came back, I couldn't find it. And then Amit Francis, I don't know if you know Amit Francis, the photographer. So he picked it up. He's the one who picked it up. And then he said to me, oh, be careful what you write about people, because some people may know them and they'll tell them what you're writing about them. And I just started laughing and we just started in conversation. I was like, no, actually, I want to be a creator and I'm inspired by those people. So I really wanted to kind of really start thinking about them. And then he's like, well, I need to connect you to Jean. Jean is my amazing artist, creator friend, connect. And that's sort of like how we really met with Jean. And so for me, I've really learned a lot from her. She's a wise woman. She's an artist, creator, but all self-made. It's always about thinking, narrative, and researching, and getting deep into something, and having that passion of like, I actually want to do justice to it.
It's fantastic. It would be great to hear a bit about what you and Jean have done together.
One of the first projects that we did was with James Barner. So before many artists or people knew who James Barner was, we hosted exhibitions and talks around his work. Recently, we also last year we worked with Bristol University, hosted an exhibition and a talk, and looking at modern slavery. So Jean's practice has always been about looking at her transatlantic slave trade and that movement, because she's from Dominica, so she's always looking at her heritage. So she did an exhibition in 2012 with the London Sugar and Slavery exhibition, and then so she extended that work further, including the artist that we're working with in Bristol. So artists created an exhibition and it was called Freedom, Whose Story? Questioning Modern Day Slavery and the way that, you know, the society is engaging with current refugees staying in hostels, and what does that look like? How do they feel? So we created projects and an exhibition and talks around that. Prior to that as well, I worked at Art Gallery in Tottenham, and we created other sort of several exhibitions at the place. One of them that's quite dear to me is an exhibition that we did with a gentleman called Tafazo Gwetai, who's also from Zimbabwe. And again, he's also one of the other artists who I've really quite learned from personally. So Jean was actually coaching me. So she began as my mentor initially. So she was mentoring me through that project for like thinking about how do I use the research that I was working to kind of connect with Tafazo's work. Because I'm a researcher first. So I use research to connect with the artist. And then Tafazo was always interested in existentialist theory and artists. So his artwork was kind of thinking about what the impact of colonization did to us. We're always creating this sort of identity of not knowing who we are. So we create this jigsaw puzzle of understanding our beingness. For me, I'm always thinking about humanity and using that, like, because everything has evolved what we were in the past. Even now, we think of ideas of post-coloniality and decoloniality. To some extent, where we are now is not necessarily connected to those. So we need to start new theories. We need to start new thinking ideas. So for me, learning never ends. I'm still continuously finding new things, especially in film. I love film. So film is kind of like what got me into it, African cinema and thinking in a different way, because feeling is what makes us human. Feeling is what, we can see beyond of like how we interact with other people. So many kind of theories and ideas I think we are picking away. So that's why I call myself Art Adlib, because like I start from music, but I'm always sort of picking up these ideas from film, from literature, from book, and I'm like, all of you are saying the same thing, but you're not quite sh you don't see it. So sometimes I see a lot of things and I'm like, oh, I have to find ways of explaining to other people because I see it, but how can I make them see it?
Yeah, it's deep work, isn't it? And I don't want to get distracted by how incredibly beautiful that story is of the Left Behind notebook leading to such an incredible partnership,
It
because
has.
I really love that sense of chance just rerouting you. That leads us really neatly into the fact, I'm just checking that I get the words right, that you're creative program officer at the Museum of the Home, and your work is they're very much about the interface with the public, isn't it? And like not the researchers, not the philosophers and the historians, but how do the public engage with these ideas? And it would be great to hear a bit about that, because I think I'm just thinking about your Left Behind notebook, and it's kind of thinking the chance that that sparked. And I think often coming to see something for somebody who isn't a student and is not a researcher, but a kind of chance encounter with an object or a story can be the thing that really starts a process of re-examination, remembering, bringing together, collecting, seeing differently. So tell us a bit about that role.
Oh yeah, I really love that role. Like, so again, it's also quite organic for me. I'm always sort of thinking about the audiences or the people who come in and like thinking about how could they enjoy the curating that we do. But I think what has been inspiring me more at the museum is that the title Home, that it opens up new ideas. What does home mean? Like, is it home a feeling? Is it a physical space? That's the opening point from the ideas point. So it's kind of opens even more doors in terms of thinking that. So like one of the programs I run is called Home Truths, which is like a program where I invite artists, creatives to come and sort of question whatever they're doing within their practice that makes them question of ideas of home and belonging. So like an example of a talk that we hosted was with two artists called Jamie Holman and Sana Malvi, who were based in Blackburn. So during 2018, they were commissioned by Blackburn Museum and Art Gallery to challenge a BBC Panorama documentary that said that there's a lot of segregation in Blackburn. The Asians and the white people are not connected. And yet they felt the opposite because of their relationship as artists. They had really created a bond. So they started writing each other letters that sort of explained their relationship and questioning their sort of maybe unconscious bias stereotypes of how they sort of viewed each other. So again, even though that was quite creative in the way that I reprogrammed them, it was to have that performance and have people starting to invited guests to question. The underlining element of that was the decoloniality of thinking about how race and certain ideas that people have of other people are not right. So Home Truths was kind of like being uncomfortable with the situation of the world saying we're segregated, but we are not. And then having this program that kind of says actually we are more connected than other people say we are. Quite always organic in sort of like how I program. So even though there's art practice, I'm thinking about the history of art. How do I bring other people to understand art without the language that's behind academic words of what art history is? It's more about feeling.
And a really direct connection then between how people respond. Because I think even in perhaps the more traditional parts of the museum where you see the recreation of rooms, I've witnessed people there have a really strong emotional connection to a chair or a little baby's cradle or a kind of a place to sit. It's really interesting that there is such a museum that celebrates these spaces. And I remember learning when I visited New Zealand, a beautiful expression in Maori, which is the Tauranga Wewe, and that means where do I stand? And it means where are my feet? It's kind of what is my home, but that makes it sound a bit literal. I think. And I think there's something really interesting in all the things you've been saying, really, about that
Yeah.
return to a home
Return to self.
base and self. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I start from. And I don't know if I managed to explain it right, like the problems I run, but this is things make sense in my head. I guess because I'm neurodiverse as well. So sometimes I'm like always trying to struggle to say what I want to say. But the beauties that I'm seeing in my mind are like endless. And I always want to other people to enjoy that because I love this work. It's just makes it brings me joy. And whenever I'm feeling pain, I always find a way of like balancing it. It's like this pain has a reason. I have to kind of get to the sense of it or the root of it once I come out of it. So I'm able to kind of see and understand other people's that are experiencing pain and like how do we bring that out and sort of celebrate what makes us joyful, what makes us human. And so that's how I kind of think about programming. For me, it's a celebration. For me, it's a celebration of difference, a celebration of who we are as people, like what we can connect in different ways. You know, it's very, very central to that practice. So thinking about the rooms, there's one of my favorite rooms that I always call it the ideas room. So when you visit, there's a room where we're talking about a space where young children have had to grow faster because they become the carers of their parents. And then on another side, we have a project that we worked with a photographer who was sort of doing a series of people who have lost families or some of their family members have gone missing. And then behind that, we also have images of like art paintings where we started thinking about emotion, that sometimes we don't see this emotion, but how can we start getting deep into emotion? And that is for me very important because I started actually thinking about the history of emotions. My BA thesis was looking at the history of emotions. So that's my favorite room in the museum as well, because whenever I go in there, it always makes me think about how can I engage with some of these difficult emotions or difficult histories to let people know the things that happened in the past, but also to kind of move forward from them. So that's like my favorite space in the museum.
What I keep hearing is something so dynamic and systemic, and kind of realizing that what we hear a lot is people saying, this is broken, the system is broken, this is the education system or the transport system or whatever. It's very much around at the moment, a sense of brokenness. But I think you articulate it in a very different way, which is that there's pain there, and you need to go in and meet the pain in order to begin the dialogue, which starts to find where the joy could grow. I don't know if that is a way of expressing it.
That is it. That is it. That really, really is. And I think it's when you talk about the room, when you think about a chair, it makes me think of Michael McMillan's room. So I'm Zimbabwean. I grew up in Africa, but the room that he presented was from his Caribbean, family and growing up in the UK. But instinctively, when I walked in that space, I remember my sitting room growing up in Zimbabwe, where we had this similar colored carpets. Why? I have no idea. Those just sort of so those things are like despite those breaks and connections, we're actually very much similar, And then I remember one of the days when I was giving a tour to a group of elderly women, white middle class, but they also really related to some pieces within that room. So I was like, this is what I mean. Like we actually have more connections than divisions that people have created. So that's why I go back to think that coloniality or colonization was more about power and creating differences so that people can remain in power rather than actually realizing that no, actually we're more the same. And like if I start even thinking about the idea of color, like black and white as individual colors, as artists, they were made from several colors. So things are not only black and white, there are even more nuances to it.
Yeah.
So that's how I see the world as well. It's not really black and white. There's so many other colors that if you unpack it to see what makes black, what makes white as colors, there's just beauty in all of that.
So now I'm going to hit you with our last question, which I gave you pre-warning of. Can everything be mended?
Well, I think it's two ways. If it's something like physical, like a cloth burning, yes, you can go because like there are some favorite clothes of mine that I'm sure the lady who works in her dry cleaner is tired of seeing my face. I'm like, I don't want to get rid of this. Can you really sew it before it breaks? So yes, in terms of that, things can be mended. But then other times, I don't think it is potential because once the harm is done, once that breaking, like my mom always used to say, you can't put the spilt milk back into the carton, is already gone. But what can you do with the ones that's left? And I think that's sort of like rethinking of what can we create, even broken things. I think there's a Japanese practice where they when something is broken, they kind of remend it with gold.
Yes, kintsugi.
Kintsugi, that's it. And it's such a beautiful practice to think about. And I think that is true. Like even when we've experienced trauma, we're broken, but we rebuild ourselves. We can never go back to the way we were, but it doesn't mean that what we are now is any less.
That's great. Thank you, Gaina. It's been fantastic to have some more time to talk to you. And
you too. Thank
the
you.
Next time won't have to be a podcast. We can just go for a coffee.
We can just, for sure. I would love that.
Really,
I would
lovely.
Love that.
Thank you very much.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Breaks and Joins podcast. And I hope you'll enjoy listening to the other podcasts too. If you want more information about the project, you can find us on www.sumeo.co.uk and also on our Instagram page, breaks_and_joins. We'd love to hear from you. A big shout out to our funders, Arts Council England, Necessity, and the Being Human Festival. And finally, I'd like to thank my wonderful editor, Chuck Blue Lowry, and Bob Carper, who wrote the music for the podcasts. Thanks, and hope to see you soon.